Okay. So last week we explored mitoch, and we noted that mitoch is a logical extension of some of the things we talked about in terms of ochel nefesh in general. Potentially, if you believe that what ochel nefesh means is that we take certain malachot and we write them off, and we make it that they're not a malacha at all, so then mitoch is really just a way of articulating that and saying that once we decide that there is no prohibition of these malachot, so then mitoch shehutra. L'tzorech, hutranami, l'tzorech. Well, l'tzorech, once they're permitted, they're permitted. And if you take that position, then Rashi's formulation, which is that once a malacha is permitted, it's permitted for all purposes, whether or not there's a compelling need, seems to be the... I identify with the desire to have ice cream. I don't no problem.
It's just cold. I don't want to keep... It's not hard. It's not soft enough. Like, put it on the
table. It'll take a few minutes.
Leave me alone.
So the, and that would follow Rashi's position that once something is permitted, so it's permitted entirely. And there is no limitation. Tosfot, who claims you need to justify the malacha, that you still need tzorach ksat, so there are different ways of understanding it. We saw that one way of understanding it is that really he thinks that this is ochel nefesh, but we have an expanded idea of ochel nefesh, or you think that ochel nefesh is more dechuya. We noted that on level of derabanan, you might have more limitations, even according to Rashi, like tircha, that if things are too strenuous, then we won't encourage them, or won't allow them. And we noted the position of the Rambam, who says that we don't have a universal application of the principle of mitoch. There are two malachot which we essentially erase from existence, carrying and fire, which is in Havara, which is ironic considering on a Darabon level, Havara, we dafka prohibit it, right? We prohibit making new fires on Yom Tov, which is a different prohibition. It's molid, but on a biblical level is the most lenient. And that's where we had left off. What we had left on this topic was to look at the summary of the Be'er Halacha, who explores the range of positions in Rishonim. And then we said we were going to test the very important conceptual question, which is the Gemara defines this expanded Ochel Nefesh category based on a principle of Shaveh L'Ochel Nefesh, something that is needed by all people. And the Gemara's example of something that is needed for all people is washing your hands and your face, your feet, something that's not Shaveh L'Ochel Nefesh, that's not universally necessary, desired, cared for, is a full shower or a full bath. And we noted that obviously that strikes us all as a little bit odd because, well, we all indeed take regular baths and... we do all take regular baths and showers. And therefore it is we have to ask, so what happens, right? How exactly do we define it? Do we define it in different ways in objective standards, or is it societally dependent? So before we look at that, let us look at this summary and expansion from the Be'er Halacha in number 13. So the Be'er Halacha had said, right, so if we remember the Mishnah Brura, right, the Yisrael Meir HaKohen, the author of the Chafetz Chaim, his eponymous work, writes two parts to his commentary on Shulchan Aruch, the Mishnah Brura, which is more the compendium, and Be'er Halacha, which is the more extended analysis of the halachic issues. So in number 13, this is Tafkod Kufir Ches, Shif Aleph, he writes, Mitoch Shehutra Hutza'a. So Ayin Bevet Yosei, Shehen Erich Lahavei Divrei Aposkim HaCholkim Bazeh. Bevet Yosei at length brings those positions who dispute this. Bekotev hadvarim betosefet beur, who he diladat tosfot v'harash hotzah shelo l'tzorech klal Keotot avanim v'chadomeh minat Torah asur v'lo etiru el b'di'ika tzarech k'tas. So one position is that which we've already outlined from Tosafot, which is that carrying for a non-purpose, right, for purposeless carrying, is biblically prohibited. Ochein lidat Rashi hutra hutza bimitoch, but according to Rashi, carrying is wiped away through the mechanism of mitoch. Afilu shalol l'tzarech klal v'hotzat avanim, and therefore carrying rocks, rock mi derabanan asur, is only prohibited rabbinically. V'cheinu dat harif lefi mashe mitzadein haran b'sof dvarav, and that is how the Ran understands the Rif as well. V'chein katav harav amagid dat harif v'chein yeradat harambam v'cheinu dat rabbeinu Yeshaya muva b'shiboli haleket uv'divrei riyaz v'chein dat riyaz atzmo. It is the position of the Rif, the Rambam, though, as we saw, that might only be some halachot, Rabbi Yeshaya, the Riyaz, umitzadeid od haran, dila Rashi v'chein harif, afilu yisur dirabanan leka behotzah shelo l'tzorech. The Ran goes farther and suggests that according to Rashi and the Rif, carrying for no reason on Yom Tov is not even rabbinically prohibited. She'eno motzio l'tzorech machar. As long as you're not taking it for tomorrow, I mean, there's not a positive rejection of Yom Tov. The only thing that's prohibited are things like rocks, she'belavachi muktahim, where the prohibition is not the carrying, it's the muktah. V'cheinu dat, narav ha-magid, b'shitat ha-rambam, that's a magid misunderstands. The Rambam, ayin Sham shekatav the Rambam shesatam v'lo perish avanim asur misham de samacha shekvar katav shekol shasur b'shabbat v'chule. And the Rambam may have only relied on what he wrote elsewhere. Okay, muchem izid davka avanim v'afar v'chayegam v'asur de v'kelim v'chayegam v'il b'shabbat mutar le'idatorach shehu, and but carrying kelim, so that's obviously not a mukta problem, as we talk about Hilchot Shabbat. Ken katav v'maimor Mordechai b'darav v'magid ayin sham v'ayin v'beit Yosef. But the Beit Yosef writes, "Shemi divrei sha'arei aposkim lo mashkep makim." From other poskim, it does not sound this way. Ella, dilechol hasvarot midirabanan akol panim asur. That at least rabbinically it's prohibited. Kol she'ein bo tzorech klal, if it's not needed at all. V'chein muchal gam shitat Rashi. Levi mashe levi toset besugin, and that's what Rashi actually sounds like. V'chein mashe Rashi in several places. V'chein muvariyaz bal shitazu. Al kol panim midirabanan asur elam gein l'tzorech hayom v'afilu l'zikno sham shemekel mikol makom emasech al kol panim eze tzorech kigon tzorech hakli shelo tigonev v'chadomeh v'ayin v'pnei Yeshua besugi tzorech l'chiyach l'kulam ashal l'tzorech klal asur. So he notes that there are really three major positions as he understands it. There's the position that biblically, in order for something which is not technically Ochel Nevesh to be permitted, it needs some need for Yom Tov, the way he understands Tosafot. Rashi, as he understands him, which is that biblically, you need no purpose at all, as long as there aren't mitigating factors like Mukta and the like, you're allowed to perform these milachot that were permitted for Ochel Nefesh, even for non-Ochel Nefesh purposes, and the position of the Ran, who says that not only is it permitted on a biblical level, but even rabbinically, there is no problem barring a case like Mukta or something, but in terms of Ochel Nefesh, there's no limitation biblically or rabbinically. V'hineh mechaber satam kishitat Rashi, mishum darif haramam omdim b'shitatei. And Shulchan Aruch takes the position of Rashi, meaning that on a biblical level, you need not justify your actions as long as there aren't problems like mukta. U'midistimat l'shono shekatav v'chelim, v'lo chilek bein l'tzorech v'shelo l'tzorech, v'lo otzi michlal rak avanim, mashma distam la'tira afilu chadchila b'shelo l'tzorech u'kumosha mitzadein haran le'balei shitazu. And he says the fact that Shulchan Aruch doesn't bring up the rabbinic limitation implies that by the time he got to Shulchan Aruch, he accepted the most lenient interpretation of this position, that presented by the Ran, that even rabbinically, one need not justify his actions on Yom Tov. Lefi zeh, and therefore, tzarech lomar, deharamah shemagia litzorech udaratzmo. And therefore, when the Ramah says you do require some necessity, that was the Ramah's position himself. V'chein matinu kama pamim sh'Ramah machnis dvarav v'divrei ha'machaber ve'ino mevi b'shem yeshovrim. The Ramah sometimes does that, is that he brings his own position in conjunction with Mechaber's position. He doesn't explain who he's quoting, and that's his position. V'chein noted da'at ha'grav. And that's what the Gra seems to say as well. But if that's the case, that the Shulchan Aruch takes the most lenient position that you need not justify at all, then why in Ziv Beis does he forbid it for the purpose of a non-Jew? So he says, shouldn't that only be true if you think that it's rabbinically prohibited to do something that's unnecessary on Yom Tov? And those who think that you need no justification at all will think that for a non-Jew it's permitted as well. Which is what the Beit Yosef himself said earlier. Because the Beit Yosef earlier says that if you take the most expansive position, like the Ran, that it's always permitted, it should be permitted even for a non-Jew. Unless you want to say, unless you hold, like the position we already saw hinted at Tosfot, that when you actively do it for a problematic motivation, for tomorrow, for a non-Jew, so then it's going to be prohibited, even according to the positions, that for no purpose at all it's permitted, but for a purpose that was explicitly excluded from the heter, so then there's a new prohibition, and it is osur. Skip the after the bracket. That seems unlikely. He doesn't quote such a position. Maybe the Beit Yosef actually holds like the position of Rashi himself, namely that it's permitted biblically, but also rabbinically. And then skipping the next line, V'chol zeh lefi shita ha-mechaber, she'achriya kidat Rashi v'arif ha-rambam, achim en psak zeh tzarech iyun, she'kimat kol ha-poskim cholkim al zeh. He said, that's according to Rashi and the Rambam, but lahalacha, the Bir Halacha says most people disagreed. Mishaloka Bejaran Megama Prichadas Megam Gadar Rambam Mefarish Bogadat Shari Aposkim, etc. So here's the executive summary of this topic according to the Bir Halacha. Okay, if you lost it, so here's his executive summary. There are those who think that even once we have the principle of Mitoch, it is biblically prohibited to perform a Malacha which has no justification. The Bir Halacha himself believes that this is the majority of poskim against Shulchan Aruch. And therefore, he thinks that while Shulchan Aruch seems not to rule this way, he himself thinks that it is the majority position. And again, he quotes that whole list there at the end. Tosfot, Rabbeinu Chananel, Rabbeinu Tam, Riva, or Zaruah, Itter, Smag, Balamor, Rash, Ramban, Rashba, Ritva, Meiri, Mam Chalava. He thinks that this is the majority position, that if you don't have a justification for performing a malacha, then it is asr mid'oraita, even if it's one of the ochel nefesh related melachot. All the way at the other extreme is the position of the Ran, that it is permitted both biblically and rabbinically to perform any malacha that is ochel nefesh related without a justification. That's the position of the Ran within Rashi. The Bir Halacha goes back and forth as to whether he thinks that that is the position of Shulchan Aruch, or if Shulchan Aruch is in fact taking Rashi's position as understood by most others, not the Ran, namely that even according to Rashi, that is biblically permitted to perform a malacha with no justification, rabbinically it remains prohibited. And then the Bir Halacha toys with the question of whether doing it for a actively bad purpose, right, meaning an excluded purpose, i.e. for a non-Jew or for the day after, whether that's going to be problematic according to the positions that waive the Isser entirely. And he goes back and forth on whether the Beit Yosef believes that. In the end of the day, he thinks not, but he knows that there are some who believe yes. So you really, and the Ramah, he believes, rules like Tosa, or at least Rashi, with the Derabanan limitation. So, according to him, the majority view, again, is the most stringent possible view, namely that without justification, the performance of a malacha, even though it's an Ochel Nefesh related malacha, is biblically prohibited. The Ramah may or may not follow that. Shulchan Aruch may either take the position of the Ran that it's rabbinically prohibited but biblically permitted, or the even more extreme position, which is that it's not prohibited at all, and he's not sure about whether doing it for a non-Jew will be prohibited according to the most lenient positions, whether that creates added problems, or whether that's simply like doing it for no reason at all, and therefore it hangs on the previous machloket. So you basically have the entire range of possibilities explored in right major poskim, right? Meaning, according to the way the Bir Halacha says it, almost every one of those views is either the majority view as he understands it, which he endorses, the most stringent. The possibility that the most lenient possible interpretation is that of Shulchan Aruch, or the possibility that Shulchan Aruch takes the most lenient biblical position, but a stringent rabbinic position, which he also thinks might be the position of Shulchan Aruch, which means that by the time you leave this sugya, really most of the views are in play. You know, if you talk about not just what existed in the time of Rishonim, but even what sort of lives on in the classic poskim for Shulchan Aruch and on, all of these do seem to continue to have some staying power. One more machloket that he notes in the next one in Gimel here. So one of the examples of things you were allowed to do was carry a Sefer Torah. He notes, B'huadin machzorim u'shari sfarim lomod b'hem b'yom zeh, you could learn today. And he says, "Ulitzorach shtar dvar mitzvah she'en litzorach oto ayom mash mekam boskim she'ish la'achmir b'zeh." If something is a mitzvah, but not a mitzvah that's going to be performed on Yom Tov, so then many poskim are stringent. Though he notes that there are some Rishonim, like the Meiri, that at least think that it is only problematic rabbinically. And then he notes that the question of mitzvah, if you just look at the last two lines, v'da the kolhani poskim shevein lahachmir bazeh heim otan shoven shelohuter mishom mitoch kol erad kol im kiyesh lo tzorech ksan v'zol mikliv tzorech terashi atay efshel shayech zeh. Said obviously the possibility of having a conversation about what types of mitzvah can be performed on Yom Tov with Malacha only works according to the position that there's any problem at all. Obviously, if you thought there was no problem even after a mitzvah, so then it's ridiculous to talk about there being a specific problem of a mitzvah. I'm not sure if it's supposed to rain now or not, or just getting windy. Dafka, I can see the sky. I'm fine here. I mean, for now, I mean, if it starts raining, we should go inside. You, unless you want to go inside, so you can stand behind that thing and take off your mask. So, you know. Yes, they've just become part of our faith. Like, how are you doing?
Good. This is all for you.
What is it?
It's a Gemara and a credit card.
A credit card?
Very
a credit card that I can use in someone else's account,
yeah,
I'll take
sure,
it.
Whatever. I'll make, maybe you should give a share about that. That's what I'm not sure. But, I'll bring you your credit card if somebody brings it to my house. That's the deal.
Okay. So now let's move to... Yeah. Okay. So let's now turn towards the next question, which is the question of bathing. And showering, which, as we said, is a good test to figure out whether this standard that we set up last week, just to remind you, that's number 14 here, 14 and 15, the question of bathing, where the Gemara introduces this principle, that when we say that it's permitted to be engaged in expansive understandings of Malacha, that's only davar hashaveh l'chol nefesh, something that is needed by all, because then it conceptually fits into the framework set up by l'chol nefesh. So, as we said, because the Gemara is, you know, it's just so striking, because the Gemara's example itself is one that most modern people would take as a given, that we all, right, is shaveh l'chol nefesh, meaning there are very few people I know that by the time you get to, especially on like a 3-day Yom Tov, now it is raining. Maybe we should go inside. Yeah, maybe we should. Yep. Now I'm feeling getting wet, so. Okay. But they're doing their online internship thing. Yeah. Okay. Well, it is that it's convenient. Okay. Okay. Okay, well, I guess there's the advantage that now I can just stand here and not have my mask, which is definitely easier to breathe that way. Okay, fine. So, as I said, what we were trying to do is define the Gemara's standard of Shavuot Chol Nefesh and whether it's societally dependent. Did we add another glass wall here? Ah, I see. Got it. Okay, fine. Okay, so let's try to pin down this standard. So let's look, you know, as you see, it's a separate source sheet. I just copied it from when I gave Shir on this topic separately. We'll try to, I hope to just do it in one day. I don't want to spend 2 days on it. So let's try to get through it. So if you look at the Rashba here, number one, in the new numbering, so if you remember, Beit Shammai was even more prohibitive than Beit Hillel, and he didn't allow warming yourself or putting on a bonfire to warm yourself. And so Tosfot Rashba think that you can't really learn anything from the Machloket Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai as to whether you're allowed to make a bonfire or not. For our purposes of defining the parameters of Ochel Nefesh, because they believe that the reason that Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai argue about whether you can make a bonfire is not because they argue about the parameters of Shabbat Ochel Nefesh, but rather they argue about the principle that we spent last week talking about, Mitoch. Meaning Beit Shammai simply rejects any expansion beyond pure food-related issues. And once you reject that, so obviously you can't warm yourself up in front of a fire. I mean, you can't light a fire to warm yourself up in front of it. But that won't help us if we do hold Mitoch, shed light on the parameters of the principle. Now, he has a technical problem, which is, if that's the case, then why did the Gemara not cite this? He says maybe they didn't know of the Braita that was being invoked here, so these were two parallel discussions. But that's how the Rashba understands the issue. If you look, though, at number two in the Yerushalmi, writes as follows, Pater le train patrin al da ten de Beit Shammai, behu shishata me'en al da ten de Beit Hillel, vehein yuhu re'uyin lishti'a. The Yerushalmi is quite extreme, because the Gemara says that everyone agrees you are allowed to heat up water to wash your hands and feet. The Yerushalmi says, according to Beit Shammai, you're only allowed to do that. So in the Mishnah, it said that Beit Shammai only allows it if it's Ru'uyin Lishtiyah. But the Yerushalmi says, no, that's the wrong understanding or the wrong girsa. Rather, Beit Shammai doesn't even allow you to warm up water for your hands and feet unless you're actually going to drink from it, right? Meaning, if you put up a pot of water for tea, so then you're allowed to take some of it and wash your hands and feet. That's Beit Shammai's position. Beit Hillel, though, according to the Yerushalmi, takes the position that they need to be Ru'uyin Lishtiyah. So if you remember, in our Mishnah, it says that Beit Shammai needs them to be Ru'uyin Lishtiyah, and Beit Hillel says you don't even need them to be Ru'uyin Lishtiyah. It's simply permitted to wash your hands and feet. But the Yerushalmi's version is much more prohibitive, that even Beit Hillel requires this connection to food, that it has to be ra'uy l'shtiyah. The question is whether you actually have to drink it, right? Drink from it and make tea before you use the extra water to wash your hands and feet. You're allowed to make a midurah to warm up. But the Gemara says everyone will agree to that as long as you're using said bonfire to heat up your kettle. So then you can make the fire, according to everyone. Patar lo patrei achran, al daiton de Beit Shammai, v'hu she kumkum keneged ha-midura, al daiton de Beit Hillel, afil ein kumkum keneged ha-midura. And then the Gemara says, no, it's not true. According to Beit Shammai, you're allowed to light a bonfire if you're also going to use it to heat up your kettle. But Beit Hillel, as we've already seen, doesn't need that. If you have water that was heated up on Yom Tov or water that was heated up before for Shabbat, Rav Shmuel Chana Amar Marchitz Bahen Panav Yadav V'Raglav, V'Churna Amar Marchitz Bahen Gufo Evarim Evarim. Rav and Shmuel say you can only wash your hands and feet. This is even with water that was heated up beheter, right, in a permitted fashion. So some say you can only wash your hands and feet. And others say you can use it for your body. I don't know who said what. The Tani Shmuel marchit ben panav yad haraglav, but Rav Dumar marchit ben guvoh evarim. Zigmar said, but I figured out that Shmuel is the one who limits it to hands and feet. Rav says evarim. Okay. Now, what exactly is the question here, right? Why are we, what is the nature of this machloket of allowing heating up
water or a bonfire for warming water, etc. So if you look at number four, the Shida Mikubete quotes the Radbaz, who says, why did the Gemara think that you could make a bonfire according to Beit Shammai? So according to Rishalmi, the reason was because you were going to use it to heat up a kettle, so then you can light a bonfire. But the Shida Mikubet says no, because Devi Ochel Nefesh Mamash, because heating up a fire to keep yourself warm, even Beit Shammai will agree, is defined as Ochel Nefesh. And this is what we've already talked about a little bit last week, that one of the ways of understanding this principle of Shaveh L'chol Nefesh is not just that it's an expansion of Ochel Nefesh the way Mitoch is, but rather it's a redefinition of Ochel Nefesh. Namely, that something can be quote-unquote for food, even if it's not for food. Food doesn't mean food. Food means food and or benefit. The Rambam seems to say this as well. In number five, Shezesh Amar Hashem Ach Asher Yeochel L'chol Nefesh Lo Nichlu Bohanar Aguf Mibachutz. Right, this is the Rambam in the Be'er Shemishnayot. That which it says Ach Asher Yeochel L'chol Nefesh does not include Hana benefit of the external benefits of the body, but it will. But El Omrim Shezesh Amar L'chol Nefesh Kolel Kol Hanaot Aguf. But according to Beit Hillel, it does. According to Beit Hillel, this principle of Shaveh L'chol Nefesh, that if something is the type of thing that everyone would want, that is permitted, that's because it actually integrates into this concept of Shaveh L'chol Nefesh. I missed something. What? Hello. How are you? Wonderful. Okay. Welcome. The Rambam in Hilchot Yom Tov writes Rechitza v'sicha rein b'chal achila u'shtia v'otzenotzen b'yom tov. Washing and anointing are considered part of eating and drinking for the purposes of Yom Tov. Anything that the body needs. And therefore you're allowed to heat up water for your hands and feet. So there's a rabbinic problem. But even if it's permitted to heat up the water, the reason you can't take a shower is because of Geret Merchatz. So now suddenly, though, we get something else. Because until now, we've assumed, as several Rishonim do, that the reason you might be able to heat up water for your hands and feet, but not for a bath, is on the biblical level, the expansion to Hana'ah, to Avochel Nefesh, from food to other benefits, only applies to things that are Shaveh L'chol Nefesh. There are things that are universal. But a full shower, which the Gemara assumes is not universal, is biblically prohibited. And that is indeed the position of many of the Rishonim, many of the Ashkenazi Rishonim. But the Rambam introduces a new possibility, which is that no, maybe it's not the case. Maybe even a full shower was always Shaveh L'chol Nefesh on a biblical level. Why is it prohibited? It's prohibited because of a totally different issue. Namely, that it is Geret Merchatz. Right? That there's a Derabbanan reason, namely, that the rabbis were afraid that if people bathed, they would heat up the water prohibited on Shabbat, and that prohibition spilled over to Yom Tov. Yeah. Very good. So now, this is why it's important to understand this principle, right? This Shaveh L'chol Nefesh principle that says that there's an expansion that's possible is something Shaveh L'chol Nefesh. So as we said, one way of understanding it is that it's just part of these expansions. It's not Ohel Nefesh itself, but, you know, we have certain expansions that are allowed. However, what you see from the Rambam and the Shittim Kubetz is maybe that's not true, is that when the Gemara says that certain things are permitted because they are Shavel Ohel Nefesh, that might not mean that it's like a mitoch-esque expansion. It might be even more than that. Namely, that what it's teaching you is that food doesn't mean just food, it means even physical benefit. And as long as it reaches Shavel Ohel Nefesh, so then it's actually Ohel Nefesh. And you're right, that if it's actually Ohel Nefesh, we would expect a lot more leniency. The question of turning off the light for sleep, the only question there is going to be, well, two questions, right? One is going to be exactly as you said, which is, okay, well, is this the type of thing that Shavel Ohel Nefesh? The second is going to be whether we understand the malacha, right, like putting out the light to be direct in the same way, right? It's a negative malacha in that sense, right? But you're right that it is an extremely plausible position, based on how we understand Mechabeh, that if the light is on and you want to turn it off on Yom Tov, that you would be permitted. And as I said, even though this is not commonly done, even many of the poskim who fundamentally thought electricity was prohibited on Yom Tov thought that it might indeed be permitted to turn off the light if you can't go to sleep. So the Tzitz Eliezer entertained such a possibility, right, and seems to endorse it, right? But you're right, that's exactly the point. This is why it's important to see this, to see that, yeah, once you say that hanat haguf, right, once you say that benefit of the body is not an expansion of Ohel Nefesh in the sense that, right, it's like two steps removed, but rather it's an expansion of the concept of Ohel Nefesh itself, that it now integrates into the paradigmatic category of Ohel Nefesh. So then, yes, you would expect certain leniencies, admittedly ones that people don't take advantage of, right? But, right, right now we're already in the realm of, right, once we're talking that, we're already in the realm of things that most people don't do, but major, even modern poskim have said is obviously permitted, right? So, like, you know, one of the things, without looking at any modern poskim, right, it's been 4 weeks, we haven't looked at modern poskim, but we're looking at, like, the principles of the matter. You suddenly understand why, when I started this whole thing, I said, there's good reason to believe that in Hilchot Yom Tov, more leniency should be allowed than people take advantage of. The reason is because the more you go through the sugyot, the more you realize there's all these principles there that, even simply understood without any mental gymnastics, seem to permit a lot of things that are commonly prohibited. That is indeed the case. Yeah. Oh, the Gzeirat Merachatz? Okay. So the Rambam introduces a different position. The Rambam says, okay, look, you know what? Maybe really taking a shower is totally mutter on the level of Ohel Nefesh. So why is it prohibited at all? She said a totally different reason. And that is that in the Gemara, in the time of the Gemara, it used to be, originally, so you could take a bath on Yom Tov, you just couldn't heat up the water. But therefore, these bathhouses you're allowed to go to. And then the Gemara said that they realized that because they permitted these bathhouses, the people who ran the bathhouses who really wanted to make money ended up heating the water on Shabbat and Yom Tov, or Shabbat, let's say Shabbat. And therefore, the rabbi said, you know what, even though there's no problem biblically with taking a shower on, or a bath on Yom Tov, on Shabbat, if the water was heated before Shabbat, because people were going to bathhouses, and the people who ran the bathhouses were not scrupulous in halacha, so they banned bathing full baths on Yom Tov, which is known as Gzeirat Merachatz. Now, the question is, did that carry over to Yom Tov, where, as we've seen on Yom Tov, there's good reason to believe you could heat up the water? The Rambam thinks that no, a full bath is going to be prohibited, because as we saw, many times we just carry over the Yisurim from Shabbat to Yom Tov. So this is not an Ohel Nefesh problem, a rabbinic problem based on the extraneous principle of Gzeirat Merachatz. How did what?
But, you know, like, things that your body can fit with, or, like, things that are good for you. So, like, is that counted as a need, or is that, like, operating a parallel?
Like what?
Turning the lights off. If it would make it easier for people to go to sleep, but, like, you could go to sleep somewhere else, it's not necessarily a need. Like,
Good. So that's one. So in the case of Mechaba, that's what the Gemara really deals with, which is, okay, what happens if you have another house, another room, right? Because then, yes, turning it off would be a need, but I could accomplish this without that, right? So that's part of the calculus, is maybe sleep is a need, but the question is, what do we do when my goal can be accomplished in a different way, right? So let's say, you know, yeah, whatever, I left it in my room, but I have a guest room with a bed, I could go there, right? So that's a Gemara later on in the second parak in Beitza, where they deal with exactly that question. And the Gemara deals with it, the Gemara's case is not actually sleep, right? The Gemara's case is physical intimacy, right? Because the Gemara prohibits physical intimacy in the light, right? So the Gemara says, what happens if you leave the light on? Right? What? Yeah, that's a real thing. That's a Gemara. That's, you know, I'm not going to postulate on that now, but it's the Gemara, which is Nisak and the Rambam and Shulchan Aruch. Oh, yeah. It is. We will presumably see that sugya at some point because of the light case, right? Because the Gemara's case is not the sleeping case. The Gemara's case is physical intimacy, but obviously the other equally valid case would be sleeping, but the one the Gemara chose was not sleeping. I'm not actually sure why, but that is Gemara's case. But yes, it is a real thing. I understand that, you know, I know that of all areas in halakha where there is like lack of knowledge and myths and things like that are things relating to sexuality, just because it's not something we're taught at a younger age. That's just the way it is. I don't know what to tell you. But yes, it is a Gemara, yeah. Oh, well, let's talk about it. Turning on the light because you can't see. Is that mutter on Yom Tov? Well, okay, let's take an easy case. Lighting a fire. Let's go to a classic Gemara case. Turning on lighting a fire on Yom Tov because you can't see. Is that mutter or usher? So remember what we said. Biblically, it's definitely permitted according to everybody. Right? According to, right, Havara is actually the case. Right? This is the funny thing about Yom Tov. This is why I said it. Is that people say, well, do you mean you can turn on light? The answer is, biblically, of course, you could light a fire biblically, right? And not only could you do it biblically, but the Rambam believes that when it comes to lighting a fire on a biblical level, you don't need any justification. You could light a fire for fun, right? Which is maybe. That's a separate sukkah called Ner Shabbatella. The only reason we can't light a fire is the molid, which is why, right, on Shabbat, are you allowed to transfer a flame? No, it's your Oraita of Havara. On Yom Tov, we transfer flames because Havara is permitted. So yes, can you light a flame because you can't see on Yom Tov? 100%. You can't light it anew because of a rabbinic prohibition. But Ochel Nevet, 100%. So that which you said is crazy, suddenly you realize, no, that's actually the halacha. You're allowed to transfer a fire. Lighting a fire is a rabbinic problem of molid, right? What? What, transferring or a new fire? Yeah, that's also Gemara. That's Gemara and Beitza. Yes, both of these are actual, right? But that's pretty much agreed upon, that biblically you could transfer a fire for sure, and rabbinically you can't start a new fire because of molid, right? That's basically agreed upon. That's true of a fire. That may not be true of electric lights, right? So,
like, then forget about the fire, but any other halakha that is, like, for your own enjoyment or, like,
good, and that's exactly why this is the question you got to figure out, which is, okay, but the Gemara gives you this amorphous standard, which is you only get to count in that expansion, right, either, I mean, toch es expansion or an integration into Ochel Nefesh, if it's something which is shaveh l'chol nefesh, which the Gemara seems to have said that bathing is not, and washing your hands and face is. But that's what makes us ask the question, okay, but wait a second, if that's the standard, then yeah, we have to figure out what about nowadays? Meaning, your question basically is, couldn't you say about anything? The answer is no, the Gemara gives you a standard. What's the Gemara standard? Shaveh l'chol nefesh. But what is shaveh l'chol nefesh? So let's turn to the next page, okay? Yeah, you know what? Let's turn to the next page. If we don't get through all the exact lamdos, that's okay. But I want to really deal with this question because this is the question we need to ask. Because if we say that something that integrates into shavah l'chol nefesh itself becomes mutter because it's like ochel nefesh, that is a very expansive principle. And like I said, the perfect test case is bathing, which the Gemara seems to think is not shavah l'chol nefesh. Right? So let's look. Start at 11. Okay, to skip to 11. Here's the English introduction from Halachically Speaking. Does shavah l'chol nefesh change? Right? This is the million-dollar question. Now, cutting your nails is obviously not going to be permitted just because we've already seen that shavah l'chol nefesh, you admit, right? It's not just something that people enjoy because people enjoy taking a bath and they would take baths periodically. Is it shavah l'chol nefesh to do every day such that it would be a normal thing to do on Yom Tov, right? So like cutting your hair, you don't do every day. So to do it specifically on Yom Tov, that's not shavah l'chol nefesh. I don't get a haircut every day, right? In lockdown, I get a haircut like, you know, whatever. Very rarely, right? I can go multiple Yomim Tovim, right? And, you know, if you stay home enough and you're only on Zoom, you know, whatever. I have a big enough keep up moving forward. No one can see the back of my head. It's fine, right? It's not something that, like, anyone enjoys. It has to be enjoyed and would do normally on Yom Tov. But, like, sleep, yeah. Sleep, presumably, a malacha on service of sleep would be shavah l'chol nefesh. Right? And again, the novelty of the case that I mentioned that we haven't seen yet inside is that, look, sleep, I think most people would say you sleep every day. And therefore, turning out off the light for sleep, we understand why that might be shavah l'chol nefesh. But the fact that the Gemara pretty much takes it as a given that that extinguishing the lights to permit engaging in sexuality is, right, in sex is shavah l'chol nefesh, is actually quite novel, right? Because that's not something people do every day, right? It's something people do regularly, but not something you do every day, and yet the Gemara says shavah l'chol nefesh, right? And the Gemara's concerns are more like go to another house, right? Maybe you have another room which is dark, right? Things like that. But the Gemara doesn't reject it out of hand, right? So the exact standard is hard. But the even more important question than pinning down, you know, specific here and there is the question of, well, okay, there are certain examples that the Gemara gave that are or are not shavah l'chol nefesh. Are those like set in stone, or is shavah l'chol nefesh really something that in each generation we have to gauge and say, what is it that nowadays shavah l'chol nefesh, and yeah, that would be permitted. So, you know, I don't know what would happen if it came to the point where people cut their nails every day, right? Could we start talking about it? That would be an interesting question. I don't, you know, that's not really the way nails grow, right? But assuming it was the type of thing that people did, I don't know why, right? We might have to ask, and that would be this question. So here's the English summary, right? For Moshe Leibowitz and Halachically Speaking, generally is a good summary, very good summary of halachic issues. He writes, the question is, since most people today wash their whole bodies, i.e. take a shower on a daily basis, is doing so considered to be shavah l'chol nefesh? Or are the rules set down by Chazal regarding shavah l'chol nefesh unchangeable? Amaseh, the opinion of the poskim is that despite all this, the gzeirah of Chazal is still in effect and unchanged. Right? He takes the position that it is stringent. That's not necessarily clear, but this is a question. So let's see where he gets this from. So look at 12. Rishon Lozalman Orbach writes, this is in Shmir Shabbat Gilchata, V'yesh la'ayin kayom, we have to look into this. Nowadays, Sherov b'nei Adam, yesh la'ayin cheder ambati b'veita, the people have a bed in their house, or lefachot meklachat, or at least a shower. Lama na'asor richitzat kol haguf, v'shum she'eno shaveh l'chol nefesh, why should you prohibit showering or bathing? It is something that is shavah l'chol nefesh on a daily basis. U'mayishno mizeya bizman ha-gemara. In the Gemara, they also had something that they did routinely, which was going to the shvitz. Right? That was what they did. They didn't necessarily shower all the time, but apparently it was pretty regular to go and sweat it out on a normal basis. So, Rav Neuwirth, who writes Shmir Shabbat and often bases himself on Rosh Hashanah, Right, Vishamati Miagon, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach Zatal, I heard from Rav Shlomo Zalman, Diyesh Lachkor, Bemishi Gufonit Lachlech, Beofen, Sherov, Bnei Adam, Architim, Achar Kach, Beambat Yechama, De After, Shagam Mutar, Lachame Mayim, Beyomto, Zerachit Yazo, Rav Shlomo Zalman said, look, I don't know about a bath and shower in general. But Rav Shlomo Zalman was at least willing to entertain it if someone was actually dirty. He said, look, most people shower on a daily basis, but not always, right? Some people go 2 days without a shower. But if you're dirty, right, you fell in the mud, or whatever, you sweat, right? It's 100 degrees outside on Sukkot, and you're eating outside, and you're all sweated up, a normal person will go and shower. So Rav Shlomo Zalman was willing to at least entertain the possibility that it was indeed Shaveh L'chol Nefesh. In Shulchan Shlomo, he has a different formulation that at least once a week is Shaveh L'chol Nefesh. I don't really know what the case is that you're only getting to shower once a week and that day is Yom Tov. I don't really know how that happened. But, okay. Now, the Be'er Halacha, you know, before we look at the Be'er Halacha, so what you see here is that, you know, again, I didn't give you exhaustively the modern postgame, but what you have is, right, Rabbi Leibovitz here summarizes what he sees as the consensus view, which is that in the end of the day, Shaveh L'chol Nefesh, anything laid down in the Gemara has not changed. And then the view that's entertained by Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, which is that that's not true, that this magic principle of expanding Ochel Nefesh and saying that anything which is Saveh L'chol Nefesh, anything that most people would want to do is permitted, that is indeed going to change societally, and therefore nowadays it might be permitted. And yes, as Avigail mentioned, that creates a Pandora, that opens a Pandora's box. Because once you say that not only do we have this principle of Ochel Nefesh, and not only do we have this expansion of Mitoch, with all the parameters we talked about, but there are certain things that we think, because of the fact that they provide benefit that a normal person would want and is used to having on a regular basis, that it integrates into Ochel Nefesh itself, into the paradigmatic category of permission on Yom Tov, if we then take it one step farther and say that what counts in that magic category is societally dependent, then that really is a very, very significant heter, because potentially there are a lot of things that if normal people nowadays will engage in them on a regular basis, so then you'll basically need no justification to engage in them, right? Because they won't, again, they're going to be considered Ochel Nefesh itself. And therefore, it might be permitted Ochel Nefesh itself. Even if it's not, under certain circumstances, it might be permitted under Mitoch and all of its expansive categories. But definitely something which provides physical benefit, that is going to be, or that's going to be a really significant reason to be lenient. And, you know, I didn't bring the whole discussion, and, you know, for time, I think I'm going to have to leave this one. But one of the major questions that were asked in, you know, more like 100 years ago, going through like 50 years ago, before it, you know, became something that was frowned upon by many poskim because it's unhealthy, was smoking. Right? Because before smoking was, again, sort of not the norm, people thought that smoking was healthy and they enjoyed it and they did it all the time on a regular basis, and it was a question of havara, it's a question of fire. And many poskim said, well, what do you mean? Everyone wants a good smoke here and there, so Shaveh L'chol Nefesh. Right? Now, the interesting thing is that there were certain poskim that said, look, if what permitted smoking was that everybody used to smoke, and therefore it was Shaveh L'chol Nefesh. So nowadays, even if, let's say, you don't buy the argument that it's prohibited because of health. Let's say you don't buy that. I'm not saying I don't buy it. I do buy that it's usher, right? But let's say you didn't. And let's say you didn't buy it, and you thought it was permitted. But there are posts who say, yeah, but nowadays, since enough people have bought the argument that smoking is unhealthy and don't do it, so now smoking is not shaveh l'chol nefesh. Right? Meaning, even if you think you can do it during the week, the fact that most people don't smoke makes it that it's no longer in the magic category of shaveh l'chol nefesh. Right? So this societally dependent shaveh l'chol nefesh might cut in a kula direction, right? Rosh Shlomo Zalman's entertaining this possibility, and there are many posts who say this for halacha, right? That you're allowed to shower on Yom Tov, at least on the Ochel Nevesh point. But it can also cut l'chumra, right? Once you say it's socially dependent, you can say that there could be a time in which smoking is shaveh l'chol nefesh, and then a time in which it's not. And therefore, it's the type of thing you'd have to gauge on a regular basis. Okay. Honestly, that's the that's really what I wanted to point out in this, but because people are always interested in the shower question per se, I'll spend the next 10 minutes just summarizing the halacha l'maaseh, which moves beyond the ochel nefesh issue. And we'll see, because I only have 10 minutes. I don't know how much I'll get through, but I at least want to put it on the table. So one point to just note is that the Be'er Halacha argues that when we distinguish the whole body versus, you know, face and hands, it doesn't really mean whole body versus face and hands. It really means a full bath versus, you know, specific limbs, right? That everyone will agree that a specific limb, right? So if, right, not just my hands and feet, but I don't know, whatever. I am changing a diaper, right? And then my kid pees right here, right? So this is not my hand or my face, you know, hopefully not my face, right? Whatever. But now I want to clean it. So the Mishnah Berurah takes that as a given, that everyone would agree that's shaveh l'chol nefesh, right? That no one ever entertained that. When it said hands and feet and face, it meant like single limbs that people wash routinely. But everyone would wash the part of their body that got filthy, right? It's only a question of a whole shower, right? So if you just look at 13, right? He says, do it in shari varim, go to rag, mikta gufo shari. Yeah. Yeah, that's just what was normal for them, yeah.
But for us, people might take, like, a whole shower, but no one's really independent.
Correct, right? You could come up with the possibility that heating up water for your feet would be usher, right? Yes, I 100% agree with you, that doing, specifically washing your feet, maybe you could entertain as usher, right? Because if you think that it needs to be reassessed, that can be l'kula or l'chumra, right? And no one really just, I mean, I think people do, but it's not, like, a normal thing to do, right? People do that, like, if they have, like, an, you know, ingrown toenail, they'll, like, soak their foot or something.
Yeah, but it's not
medical. Right. They don't really, correct, they don't really, that's not a thing we do, right? And yeah, in, like, a shower, right, I mean, your feet get clean, but I have a feeling that there are plenty of people who forget to actually clean their feet, right? They just, like, sort of let the water, you know, they don't care so much, right? For sure, there are definitely people like that, I assume. Fine. But as I said, the halacha l'maaseh question of bathing is not just a question of the ochel nefesh, it's also the derabbanan issue, so that's what I said outside before, but inside it's in number 14. The Amar Rav Shimon ben Pazi, Amar Rav Shimon ben Levi, Mishum bar Kapara, B'tchila yirochtin b'chamen shuach mu'ber Shabbat. Originally they used to bathe on Shabbat with water that was heated up before Shabbat. But then people started to lie. The bathhouse owners used to something's smoking there. I don't know what it is. It looks like it's coming from a car, but the car looks like it's off. I'm just going to assume that it's okay, unless it blows up. So then the bathhouse owners started heating up water on Shabbat and saying it was from before. So Asura Chamehidur is as they are. So they prohibited showers, but they permitted sweating. Right, going to a sauna. People would still lie. They would say, I'm going to the sauna, and then just go into the bath. So Asr lehen et azayav et ziruchame gveria, so they forbade going to the sauna, but they allowed people to go to the hot springs. But people would still go to the bath and just say, no, I didn't take a bath. I took a bath in the hot springs of Tveria, and that's mutter. So so then they forbade those who allowed cold water. But Rosh in the davar sofa, they realized this was never going to end. And they prohibited bathing. Sorry, they permitted bathing in hot springs, but forbade the sauna. The Rif says, that lenin rechitza b'yom tov b'cham en shulchum amerav yom tov chazinan lagon dekakatav ha'achi demin lo yirchaz adam kol guvu b'shabbat b'cham en shulchum amerav shabbat dafka b'shabbat abel yom tov shari lerchot kol guvu b'cham en shulchum amerav yom tov. So the Rif says that the rabbinic prohibition of taking a bath in water heated before yom tov doesn't apply on yom tov because that's already too far, meaning even on Shabbat it's permitted biblically to take a bath in water heated before Shabbat. It's just rabbinically problematic. So he says it doesn't make sense. So on Yom Tov, we're biblically I'm allowed to heat up the water. And definitely to heat it up before. So therefore, the Rif says it is permitted, and even it's permitted both biblically and rabbinically. But the Ritva says, no, even if you were to argue that heating up the water for your whole body was Shavu L'chol Nefesh, it would be prohibited because of Gzeret Merchatz. Right? So you have this Machlok Rishona, which is even if it's permitted biblically, it is prohibited rabbinically because of Gzeret Merchatz. Now, the interesting thing that Rabbi Jaster notes is that if you think that the reason you can't shower on Yom Tov is because of Gzeret HaBalanim, so then there seems to be no room to be lenient nowadays, even if you think Shavu L'chol Nefesh is subjective, because Gzeret HaBalanim is not subjective. But if you think that the reason you can't shower on Yom Tov is biblical, so then it would actually be potentially more lenient, right? Because the rabbinic restriction of showering on Yom Tov is not subject to societal change. But if you think the reason not to shower is the biblical reason, namely Ochel Nefesh, and you think Ochel Nefesh is subject to change, so it might end up being that those who think that the reason not to shower on Yom Tov is the rabbinic reason, like the Rambam, would be more stringent, right? And those who think that it's because of Ochel Nefesh would actually let you do it. And therefore, he notes that according to the I switched the Rambam there. So he says, according to Tosfot, heating water for bathing on Yom Tov constitutes a Torah-level prohibition, whereas according to the Rambam, it's only a rabbinic prohibition. But moreover, according to Tosfot, this prohibition is subject to change as the category of Shavu L'chol Nefesh varies in accordance with the habits of each particular generation, whereas the Gzeret HaBalanim is not subject to change, as the edicts of Chazal apply even when their reasons do not. This is quite ironic, as normally we are stricter regarding a Torah law than a rabbinic requirement. So it turns out that the best path to permitting it is actually the people who think that the reason not to bathe is biblical. Right? Because according to the Rif, it's permitted only if you heat up the water before Yom Tov. But if you heat it up on Yom Tov, The Rif thinks that the Gzeret HaBalanim doesn't apply in Yom Tov at all. The Rambam thinks that biblically you're allowed to shower on Yom Tov, rabbinically you're not because of Gzeret HaBalanim. Tosfot thinks that in the time of Chazal you couldn't bathe on Yom Tov because it was biblically prohibited. But nowadays, so according to the Rif, it's going to be permitted. According to the Rambam, who says that it's Gzeret HaBalanim, that may not be subject to change, so it might still be prohibited. And according to Tosfot, that in the time of Chazal, it was biblically prohibited to bathe because it wasn't Shavu L'chol Nefesh. If you think that Shavu L'chol Nefesh is subject to societal change, then specifically for Tosfot, it will be permitted. The people who own the bathhouses. That's all. So then how does this... Yeah, we have 2 minutes. Let me just summarize it. So how does it come to halacha? So basically, there are some poskim who are really machmir, because either they think that like Tosfot, it's an issue of Shava L'chol Nefesh, of Ochel Nefesh, and they think that it's not subject to change. Or they think that the problem is like the Rambam, that it's Dera Balanim, and therefore a right that does change, but ironically the Dera Balanim does not. There are others who think, no, it's biblically prohibited, and therefore nowadays it is subject to style change, and therefore it's permitted. The one other major het there that's brought, and this is mostly, and I gave you the English summary in 20 for my chapter, this is mostly, most of the literature on this is brought in the context of mikvah, because, right, mikvah had the problem of Derda Balanin potentially, and, you know, old mikvot were, you know, really freezing, especially in the winter. So the question was, were you allowed to warm it up before Yom Tov, or Shabbat, is there a problem of Derda Balanin? So he notes that there were some poskim who thought, one second, that there is no Gzera Balanim by a mitzvah, and therefore it was no problem. But there were other poskim, like the Noz Behuda and the Chacham Tzvi, who said no. Gzera Balanim is specifically hot water. But lukewarm water, they felt, was not Gzera Balanim, because that's just taking away the cold. That's not, right? The Gzera Balanim was you were worried that people were going to heat it up, right? People don't like go out of their way to get things just sort of like bearable. That's not what people do. That halachically might be cold. And therefore, when it comes to the mikvah or showering for Yom Tov, his summary is that the most likely time to say it's permitted is if one is bathed in sweat, then it's permitted to shower in lukewarm water, right? Because then basically you can be mistired of a lot of things, right? The position that when you're dirty, it's automatically shavah l'chol nefesh, right? Plus the position that if it's lukewarm, so then it might not have Zer HaBalanin anyways, right? So then you've solved the Tosfot problem, you've solved the Rambam problem potentially. And indeed, that was the position of Rabbi Soloveitchik, that you're allowed to bathe on Yom Tov, even if the water is heated on Yom Tov. Rav Shechter as well says, at least if you're dirty and really uncomfortable, it's permitted. Now, obviously, there are other technical problems, like using bar soap and things like that, but that's a much broader discussion, which is not for now. But like I said, this is good because it's a test case of some of the issues of the changing standards of Shavu'ot L'chol Nefesh, ancillary needs that might be superimposed that create problems. Anyways, okay, yeah.
I mean, it prohibited baths. You know, you're